Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Shavuot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Aleph. And we are holding right at the top on the third line. So remember yesterday, we found out that there's a whole new world of Shavuot, which are Shavuot Derabbanan. And we spoke about what's actually going to turn out when we continue learning in the Masechet. We spoke about the most recent of those takanas. The most recent of the takana was actually what Reb Nachman spoke about yesterday, and that was called the Shvuat Hesed. So Shvuat Hesed is a Shvuah that is made where there's no Chiyav D'Oraisa, because the Chiyav D'Oraisa is only in the Moreh B'Mikzat, and over here the person was Kofer Bakol. So if he's kofir bakol, he's not chayev at all. The Rabbanan, however, the way it was put in the Gemara, was kedei lahafiz da'ato, in order that he should feel that we're not just ignoring his tviyah, because after all, it's not normal for a person to just make up out of thin cloth a tviyah. And therefore, lahafiz da'ato, the Rabbanan, were metaken eshvuat hesed. So today the Gemara wants to know on the third line over here, Ma'ika ben Shvuah D'Oraita, the Shvuah D'Rabbanan. What exactly are the differences? Now, this is a very unclear question for a number of reasons. First of all, it's not clear whether this difference between the Shvuah D'Oraita and Shvuah D'Rabbanan is a reference to all of the Shvuah D'Rabbanan, because we're going to find out later that there are Shvuot that are different than the Shvuas Hesed. We have Shvuot that are from the time of the Mishnah, actually, that are called the Shvuot HaNotlin, where we made a takana that somebody is able to be Nishpa and to be Noitel. So we'll be talking about that soon. But there's one question. Is this Gemara referring to all Shvuot Rabbanan? Furthermore, when it says, what is the difference between them? There's tons of difference between them, according to many shitas, in how we actually are mechayev shvuah. In other words, do we do the whole thing with the terrifying them, and you know, the whole earth trembled, all of that, and do we use bedavka the shemais? All of these are big questions that the Gemara is not even going to touch upon. And furthermore, even in the Iker Dinim of Shavuos, there are differences between them that the Gemara isn't even going to mention. For instance, a Shavuot Rabbanan of a Shavuos Hesed would be Chal even on Karkaot. Well, the Gemara's not going to discuss that. So all that we're interested in asking over here in reality is, what is the difference between not the Dinim of the Shavuot, but rather on the places where the Shavuot is chal, on the people where the shvuah is chal? What is the difference between them? That's what we're looking at. So, ika b'nayu, mepach shvuah. One very important difference between them is that, can you flip a shvuah on the other person? Because there is a concept of mepach shvuah in which you can tell the other person, you know what? I don't want to swear that I don't owe you money. So if you swear that I do owe you money, I'll pay you. So that flips the shvuah, the responsibility for the shvuah, onto the other person. And in a d'oraita, you cannot do that, because the person has an absolute right to be semich on that shvuah d'oraita. I want to be teifes, the din in the Torah. And the din in the Torah is this, and don't tell me that I should do it differently. This was the right that was given to me. Ma d'oraita, you cannot be mapech shvuah, but d'rabbanan, you can be mapech shvuah. Well, wait a minute. What about according to Mar Bar Rav Ashi? According to Mar Bar Rav Ashi, a d'oraita also allows you to be mapech shvuah. So let's say in a case of Moreh B'Mikzat, if somebody says, look, I don't want to swear that I don't owe you, so I'm ready to pay. If you're ready to swear that I owe you this extra money, I'm ready to pay the whole thing. It's what, according to Mar Bar Rav Ashi, you can do. So then, is there no difference in the chalos of a Shvuah D'Oraisa and a Shvuah D'Rabbanan? Yes, there still is. The difference would be, Ika b'nayu mechat l'nichse. Can you go into the person's property? Al pi Bezdin, obviously. So can Bezdin go into the other person's property if the guy refuses to make the Shvuah and he also refuses to pay? Can you instantly go and just take his things? So, b'di'oraita nachtin l'nichse. You can in Ishvu D'oraisa, but you cannot in Ishvu D'rabbana. We'll see later on, so what can I do? But even so, when the Rabbanan were mechayev you Ishvua, they did not make it so chomur that if you don't do it, that we have these legal obligations that come from it. It was just a chiev to do it, and it doesn't change our rights to take away your property. And what about according to Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yossi says even in a drabonan, we do go into his property without further ado because of the Mishnah in Gittin. That's the case of Mitziat Chereshet Vekatan. So over there, there is a takona, remember, that there's a din of Gezel. Yesh bem Gezel mipnei darkei shalom. So now the question is, is there a chiev to pay for stealing lollipops from babies? So there's a question. Does a baby really have a kinyan? Or cases of other cases where someone doesn't have dasa. Echsheita. Echeresh. So the Rabbana made a takana that there is considered to be an ownership in the case of Echeresh Sheita Vekatan mipnei darkei shalom. Because otherwise you can have a complete breakdown over here. I mean, parents are going to start beating up people who took away the boost from their little baby. How could you do that? And things like that. So they made a takana. Rabbi Yossi says that's not the point in the takana over here. It's not because of your saying darkei shalom, so we treat it like darkei shalom. It's actual gezel gomor. It's not that you're not acting correctly socially. It's that the Rabbonin gave it a real din of balut. Obviously, mid Rabbonin. But we don't look at it as being different than any other theft. And what's the difference between them? As Rabbi Chista said, it doesn't mean that Rabbi Yossi holds it's a D'oraisa. It means it's gezel gomor midivrayim. So what's the difference what you call it? You call it gezel or you call it mipnei darkei shalom. Does it really matter? What's the difference? Am I nafkamina? And we said over there the nafkamina is that according to Rabbi Yossi, if you're calling it actual gezel, that means that it's real ownership, and that means min rabbanan will be motzio b'dayanim. So when the rabbanan made a takana, they made a takana that is nogea, giving it all kinds of the same halachas that would be given in the D'oraisa. So according to that, it should be the same thing over here. That if Rabbi Yossi is saying that once we make a takana that gives a status of ownership or a level in which you're mechuyev to respond for another person's ownership, you create the Shvuas Hesed, so then that would mean that he would hold that you could also go to Bimotzi B'dayanim. So now what's the difference between a D'oraita and a D'rabbana in the case of the Shvuah? It should be exactly the same. Ah, there's still a difference. The difference would be like this. In a case where shekinegdo chashud al hashvua. So remember that we have a takana that where a person is chashud al hashvua and he cannot swear. So what do we do then? So in a D'oraisa, if the person who is mechuyev to take the shvua cannot, because he's not a person that is neman, he's been found to be lying in shvuot, in other cases, or over here is mukhzikaf, from whatever the halakha would be. So in the D'oraita, what we do is, we take the shvua and we put it on the other person. And we say, you swear, and we'll give it to you. So that is one of the cases that are called the nishboim v'notlim. We're going to be learning about them, as I said, later. Those are shvuas that are from the time of the Mishnah. They're not called the Shvuas of the Gemara. It's not like the Shvuas Hesed that Reb Nachman, it was at the time of Reb Nachman that we made the Takana. So over there, in the case of a D'oraisa, we turn it into a Shvuas HaNotlin, and they put it on the person who's demanding payment, and he can swear and take the payment. But where it comes to D'rabbanan, the whole idea of a Shvuas Hesed is only a Takana. So we're not going to make a Takana for a Takana. What do we do if the person is supposed to be Nishba Hesed? What if he can't swear? So let's make a takana that the person kinegdo could swear and be naito. No. That's already a takana la takana. The idea of being mefi sedato is sufficient. And we don't move it on. So in this case, we didn't give him Shavuot Chesed, and therefore, there's nothing to do. The guy has no right to demand a Shavuot, and he's going to lose his money like any would have been the Din Midiraisa in a case where somebody was great for Bakol. But now, I don't understand. So what are we left with? You're telling me that it does not grant you rights for seizure, right? So you can't now get a court order and take away this guy's TV set because he wouldn't do the Shavuot Chesed. So I understand. So what can you do? Right? It's just like you put an advertisement in the paper and you tell people this guy's a bum. I mean, what kind of eitz is it to make a Shavuot that you can't enforce? So they say, b'rabbanan lo nachtinan l'nichse. According to those who argue on Rabbi Yossi, the Tanakhama, we just discussed, the Machlokas, the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah about Darkei Shalom. So what do we do? Well, we're mishamtina like. We put him into a cherem, nidui, and we leave him there until such time as he's ready to do what he needs to do, like we do with anybody else who, when faced with a mitzvah or a chiyuv d'rabbanan that he doesn't do, we will pressure him until he does it. So we'll put him into cherem. Amar le Ravina le Rav Ashi, you're calling that not being going into his property? I don't understand. Hai nakte bekufsei d'nish bekele glimehu. This is the classic case of grabbing someone's balls and twisting until he agrees to do what you want to do. And you're saying that, well, of course, that's completely his own rutzen. I mean, I didn't do anything. That's ridiculous. That's the biggest zisher that's possible. So how could you call that lo nachtin l'nichse? That can't be the solution. That makes no sense. That's total force. Okay, I mean, you didn't put any kind of limit on it, right? You said, we'll put him into cherem. So what does that mean? For the next 20 years, he'll be in cherem until he takes a shvua? So what greater force is there than that? Elamai avdinan le. Okay, you're right. So what would we do? Omar le, mishamtinan le, adumati zman nagde. No, obviously, we don't go outside of the normal limits of shamta. So what are the normal limits of shamta? The normal limits are that we give 30 days, and after that, we'll give the guy actual malchus, drabbanan, and then we let him go. We don't keep beating him, and we don't keep shamting him until he does it. So, meshamtinan le'adamati zman nagde, we give him a standard 30 days, and then nagdinan le, then we give him malchus, and then shafkinan le, that's it, and we don't do anything else to him. Amrif Papa, there's another case where you can have the other guy swear. Case would be like this. I'm on the Afke Shtara Al-Khavre, and the person claims it's a Shtar Parua. So somebody's got a written Shtar, and the person that you present the Shtar against claims that this Shtar was already paid up. So we tell him, that's ridiculous. If we have a valid Shtar, there's no basis for you to say that it was paid. Lav kol kamina, zir shlein. Go out there and pay up. But if he says, I want the Toveya to swear that I did not pay him, and then I'll pay him, so then we actually say, Ishtavale, you go and you swear that you did not already get it. So now the question is, isn't this essentially a mapich, a shvua kind of thing? Because, I mean, if you don't hold of Mar Bar Rav Ashi, who said that you can actually do that even in a deraita, you could tell a person, you swear, and you take the money. I mean, this seems to be exactly that type of thing. I, who don't have any rights like that, can say, this is what I want you to do. So some say that Enochinami, this is only true, Aliba de Mar Bar Rav Ashi. However, there's a problem in this particular case that others learn that this is a special halacha that is not nogea the general din of mapech shvua. What's the special halacha? Remember that it's incumbent on the borrower to pay the fees for creating the shtar. And in case where he refuses to pay the fees or is unable currently to pay the fees, the person who is holding the shtar against him does not have to give it back to him. They could tell him, listen, I'm happy to write you a receipt, but I'm not going to give you back the shtar until you pay me. Now, of course, nobody wants somebody to be holding a shtar against them. That's tremendous pressure to force a guy to pay what he's really supposed to pay, whatever the charges were for creating the contract. So since we have given that option to the lender to be able to actually retain a contract until such time as the fees are paid, we have to provide some kind of way for the person who is now caught by a contract like that, that he really did pay, that for him to at least be able to insist that the person swear that he's telling the truth and that it wasn't a contract that was paid off. So sometimes this is a unique, Rapopa's case is a unique situation that isn't dependent on Mar Baravashi's idea of being Mapich HaShvua V'Diraisa. Omele Ravacha Breda Ravel Ravashi. I don't understand. Why is this any different? That you're saying over here that somebody that is being Toveya with a shtar is going to be put in exactly the same situation as someone who is Pogema shtar. That's not fair. We have a concept called Pogemet shtaro, which in general we don't, since the initial case was talking about a woman by her ketuva. So let's say a woman's ketuva was for $1,000, and the guy is presented with this ketuva, and he says, what's the matter with you? I paid this ketuva already. And she says, you only paid me a hundred out of that thousand. What about the rest of it? So in that case, the shtar of the ketuva is no longer powerful to be toveya, because once you're telling me that the amount of the ketuva written in the shtar you admit is not accurate, how do we know how inaccurate it is? The whole point of a shtar is that I can rely on it. If you yourself are agreeing that, well, it's not exactly what it says, so then we don't have a shtar. Now we're dependent on your telling us, like, how much of it? How do we know it wasn't 500? How do we know it wasn't the whole thing? So that is a very strong weakening of your position. So in that case, we're mechayev you to swear. If you want to collect, you woman want to collect, and you admit that some of it was paid, so then you have to swear that that was all that was received, right? Now, in this case, we're saying the same thing. Here, there was nothing wrong with your shtar. It's a 100% kosher shtar. And what, we're putting you in the same position of somebody who's faced with a shtar that is a piece of garbage because we know that it was already partially paid? That doesn't make sense. So why would this case where a man has a kosher shtar be no different than a case where the woman was pogemet et shtara and it's the same halacha? You swear and you take. Doesn't make sense. So ma bein zeh pogemet shtara. So Rav Ashi said to Rav Acha, no, there's still a big difference. Because in the case where someone is pogemet et shtar, even if the person doesn't say, well, I want you to swear that that's all that you received, the court is not going to use this shtar unless the person swears. It's not. It has nothing to do with whether there's a plaintiff who's insisting that I want a shvua. The ability of the shtar to be used as a document in court demands a shvua, whether the person asks for it or not. Masha Inkin, so over there, Tanin and Leanan, the court insists on the shvua to use the shtar. Masha Inkin Hocha, what we're not talking about, there was no pagam in the shtar. It's just that the guy presented a shtar. What we will do when you present a shtar is we will tell the defendant, okay, buddy, you can pay at the clerk. Then if he says, I'm telling you, I'm not, I pay this already, let him swear. Okay, so if he insists that the guy should swear, so say, okay, that's like a getter of a shvuas hesed. I'm reading my zilish tavale to be, give him at least an option. There's a question whether it's a mamish shvuas hesed. It's a big machlokas in the Rishonim. Is it mamish the same as a shvuas hesed? Or is it like a shvuas hanotlin, which we talked about a moment ago, and that's more chomer in certain ways than a shvuas hesed, as we're going to see rather soon. Anyway, that's the difference. And furthermore, let me tell you something else. if this person is a Talmud Chacham, so then lo mashbi'in alei. We're not going to force him to swear if he's got a perfectly kosher shtar. I don't understand. But all of a sudden, a guy who's a Talmud Chacham can now go over and tear off people's clothing and say, this is mine. Well, that's insane. What's the difference if he's a Talmud Chacham? If the halacha is that he's mechuyev to make a shvua, why the heck would a Talmud Chacham not be mechuyev? So tzurmim rabbanan mashlach lima deinche. He can walk over, take off people's coats, and walk off with them. That's not, that can't possibly be that he could take it without a shvua. What it means is that lo mizdakina leledina, we will not tell that person, listen, come to Beis Din and swear, and then we'll give it to you. We just ignore him. If he insists that he wants to come, fine. So then we'll get involved in the din. But we certainly don't want to be pogame in the Kavod HaTorah by saying to him, look, we don't believe that you didn't collect the shtar already, so we insist that you take a shvua. That we don't say. If he says, I need to collect this money and I'll come to court and I'll be nishba, fine. That he can do. That's the only difference. It's just a question of derech eretz. Okay, the next case that we had in the Mishnah. So there, we had the whole discussion, if a person says, Marali biyatcha, and the guy says, yes, it's true, I'm going to pay you, next day you come back. Okay, I'd like you to pay me. Oh, I paid you last night, you know, remember, I came to your house. That was the case in the Mishnah. And at the end of it, what we said was that if the guy says, okay, if you admit you owe me the money, then I'm telling you, do not pay me that money back unless it's in front of witnesses. Ah, so there we said that he was mechuyev to pay him with witnesses. Omer Rav Yudah Omer Ravasi. Now we have a case that is like this, and that's the question of the original debt. If the original debt was incurred in front of witnesses, that could be the same as this case where you tell the person, only pay me back with witnesses, because it's assumed, look, you see I don't trust you. You see that I insisted on having witnesses here. And that means that if you're going to come back to me when the loan is due a year from now, and you're going to tell me, well, I paid you, that I'm going to be able to ask you, well, where's the witnesses that I paid you? Witnesses? I didn't know you didn't trust me. Well, you saw that I took witnesses in order to make sure that I can recover the loan. So obviously, I don't trust you. Okay, so that's the question here. Omer of Yudah Omer of Asi. Ha'malvet chaviro be'edim, tzorich lefor o be'edim. The very fact that I insisted on having witnesses means that you cannot tell me that you paid back the loan, and it's not going to help you to make a shvuas heset in this case. So then, says Rav Yudah, remember that Rav Yudah became a Talmud of Shmuel. So, ki amrita kamei de Shmuel, when I said this maimer of Rav Asi over to Shmuel, he said to me, look, can't the guy tell him that praticha bifnei ploni uploni, I did have witnesses, here's their names, here's their addresses, unfortunately, these guys moved to Timbuktu. And I have no way of presenting those witnesses. So can't he say that? I mean, so then he's saying, I did pay you. In other words, he's left in the same situation that we have to believe him because now he's saying he does have witness. So if he could have that migo, then he should be able to say, look, for all intents and purposes, I'm believed to say that I paid you, because nothing changes, because all I have to do now is add the names of witnesses. I mean, so it doesn't do anything to tell me that you didn't trust me. Now, the question is whether we have a problem from our Mishnah against Rav Asi, who claims that you have to be Poreya Be'ed. Because in our Mishnah, what's the case? Monali Biyadecha. Armale, yes, it's true. L'machara Marlo, please give me the money that you admitted to. And he said, I came over last night and I gave it to you already. So the din in the Mishnah is that he's potter. Now, here we have witnesses that this person was Toveya him, right? He's bringing in these witnesses to Beis Din the next day. And the witnesses say, this guy admitted that he owed money. And yet, it says over here that he's believed, natati v'chayis poter, he's believed without needing to pay. So now, isn't that the same thing as lending him the money in the first place in front of Edim? And it says over here that he's poter? Do you have to the Rav Asi? Hamalacha Rav Asi, what the world? What does this have to do with my case? I talked about a case where the original loan was in front of witnesses. That showed that the lender did not trust the guy and that for all intents and purposes, he was telling him, look, buddy, I want to make it very clear. I have witnesses. You want to argue this case, then you better bring witnesses. That's what I said. And you're asking me from this ridiculous case where over there the person had lent him the money originally without Edim. And now because he told him, hey, you owe me money in front of Edim, so that's the same thing as giving him initially the money, I'll pay Edim, and therefore it's a chiyuv for the person to pay him back. It's crazy. It's not the same case. So anaki amri echremi kara osfe be'edim dololadi dehemne. I said this halacha where initially the loan was made on the basis of witnesses, which was a clear indication that I do not trust you. But over here, he did trust him. He made the loan originally without any edim. It happens to be that they're edim now at the time that he's toveyahim, and he admits that he owes him the money. So therefore, what? That's the equivalent of his needing to pay him with witnesses? Absolutely not. Anyway, this is one approach. Now, Rav Yosef says it over in a way that makes more sense. Rav Yosef says like this. Let's start from the top. Om Rav Yehuda, Om Rav Asi. Hamalvet chaveiro be'edim, eno tzorich leforo be'edim. The fact that there are witnesses there in this version does not mean that just because I had witnesses, it means that I don't trust this guy unless he's able to prove with witnesses that he paid me back. However, now here's the clincher in this approach. If at the time that he made the loan, he said, do not pay me back unless you have witnesses to the payment. So imamar, al tifraini elabedim, and he said this to him at the time that he made the loan. Then, and if he doesn't, then we don't accept his taina. Now, then in this version, Rav Yehuda said, I went and told this over to Shmuel. So, Gamrita came to Shmuel, and he said to me, he can still tell the man, Peraticha bifnei ploni uploni, vochulam lebdinat hayam. It's true that he's not believed to say, I paid you b'ni l'veincha, with the migo that he could say that I paid you in front of these guys. Because after all, the loan was made on condition that he pays it back in front of Edim. But if he tainas that he did fulfill that condition, he paid you back in front of Edim. He's believed. And as long as he supplies us with the names of the Edim, the very fact that, look, that means that in the event that we can identify these people, he is going to be in really hot water if it turns out that he was lying. That is enough that we're semech on the fact that he says there were Edim. Now, in this version, we ask a kasha from the Mishnah. Tanan, and there now the kasha in the Mishnah is not against Rav Asi, it's against Shmuel. It says in the Mishnah that monali biyadecham, biyadecham, and the guy says, yes, absolutely, I owe you the money. And then the last case was that if the guy says, well, don't pay me back unless you've got witnesses. The next day he comes and he says, okay, remember the money you admitted you owed me yesterday. I'd like you to repay it. And he says, but I gave it to you. There he's not going to be believed, says the Mishnah. Chayav, because tzarech liten lo bifnei edim. Since the guy said, only pay me in front of Edim, this person who says, I paid it to you last night in your house, is not believed. To Yuvta de Shmuel, doesn't that show? Now, it could have meant, we could say that the Mishnah means that I paid you back last night means I paid you back without any witnesses, right? And therefore, it would not be a question. But we're assuming that he wouldn't just claim that he paid him back, but that he's telling him, well, I did pay you back in front of witnesses. So that would mean that Shmuel, who says, if a guy would say, I paid you back, in front of witnesses, and now he says they took a plane last night to Timbuktu, that he would believe, is mashma over here, since the Mishnah is not machalik, that it wouldn't matter. Even if he said that, we wouldn't believe him, and he would need to pay. Amar HaShmuel, I agree. The Mishnah definitely is mashma that way. However, it's true that I'm not making sense according to the Mishnah. Maybe. But there's definitely another Tana who says exactly what I said. Because take a look at this braita, the Tanya. If the Malveh tells the Loveh, now look, Be'edim Ilviticha, Be'edim Parali, you see, I made certain, he says this at the time, that he's making Malveh. Note, I am giving you this money in front of witnesses, and I expect you to pay me back in front of witnesses. So in that case, either when thou comes to court and the guy says he never paid me, either he pays in court or he brings absolute proof that it was already paid. But, now that's true, but Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says, like me, says Shmuel, Yochel lomar lo peraticha b'fei ploni uploni v'ochel lom l'b'yatayam. He can claim that he did pay in front of witnesses, and that they went to Timbuktu, and therefore I was going according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, who says exactly what I said. Parech Rav Acha, no, that's not an answer to Shmuel. Because what makes you think, Bechlal, that the Braita was talking about a case that it was made b'sha'at halva'a? Maybe it's like the case in the Mishnah. Dilma b'sha'at tviyakoi. V'ochika omale. Maybe he's only telling the person, look, didn't I lend you the money in front of witnesses? And you're claiming that you paid me back. So be'edim hayalacha leforani. You should have paid me back. I came into this courtroom demanding payment on the basis of the witnesses that I am presenting. Can you please present your witnesses? No, my witnesses went away. Well, my witnesses didn't go away. I didn't come to this courtroom saying I once had witnesses that I lent you money. The point is that I lent you money on the basis of those witnesses so that you would pay me back on the basis of witnesses that appear in court, not that are in Timbuktu. So, Be'edim, you should have made certain to have witnesses that you can bring into court. Be'edim ayulacha leforani. So there, okay, I understand that if the person had come to, not that he had said, he only was, says to him, isn't it, doesn't it make sense? So in that case, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says, look, he never said, Beferish, that I'm only going to accept payment when you actually present aid him. He's just making an argument that it seems to me that the moral position is that if I'm doing what I set out to do in terms of legalities, I mean, it calls upon you to do the same. Says Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, why does it call upon him to do the same? What, because he acted in a particular way that was all on the up and up, and this guy is Mr. 100%, cross all your T's and dot all your I's, so therefore I'm mechuyav to do that. No, says Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. But this case may not be talking about b'sha'at halva'a. If we're talking about it, the sha'at halva'a, he said b'feirish, look, I'm lending you in front of Aden. Then even Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira would have agreed that to the Tanakama. He said so. Where's your aid? Divrei HaKol Chayav, we don't see anybody necessarily supporting Shmuel at all. I do not see how you can answer Shmuel based on the way you're reading this braita. I'm sorry. Omer of Papi Mishmei Derava, look, I could tell you one thing. The halacha is that HaMalvetcha Veiro Be'edim Tzorich Lefor O Be'edim. And that is Rav Papi's version of what Rava had said. But Rav Papa's version of what Rava had said is that HaMalveh et Chaveiro Be'edim Ein Tzarich Leforo Be'edim, unless he actually stipulated at the time, Im Amar, Al Tifra'eni Ela Be'edim, then Tzarich Leforo Be'edim. And even so, if the borrower says, well, I did pay you in front of a din, pirateicha bifnei ploni uploni, and they went ahead and went to Timbuktu, so then he would be ne'eman. Okay, so that means that Rav Papa is basically saying that the halacha is aliba shmua, which would all be very nice, except for the unfortunate fact that there's a machlokas rishonim about the correct girsa in Rav Papa, because Rabbeinu Hananel, if you take a look at Rabbeinu Hananel, he brings the Gemara as saying that he cannot claim that he was Borea in front of Adam, who then goes to Timbuktu, in which case it would be paskening Aliba de Rav Asi. Okay, so a lot of the Rishonim go like the Rabbeinu Hananel, paskening not much more. Now, we've got a number of cases. The one makes this complicated, cute simon for what the cases are. So let's take a look at the cases one after the other. A guy once says to someone, Ahudi Amar Lechavre, when you pay me back this loan, at the time he's lending money, I want you to pay it back to me in front of the two people that I trust the most, and that's Mr. Reuven and Mr. Shimon. So he goes ahead, and he pays him back, and he has witnesses, but he does not have Mr. Reuven and Mr. Shimon. And these witnesses come, and now the lender says, well, I don't believe these guys. They're obviously liars, because they're claiming it was paid back in front of them, and I know for a fact it wasn't paid back. And I told the guy, I'm not going to believe his witnesses. Why did he avoid paying it in front of Mr. Reuven and Mr. Shimon? Omer Abaye, look. He said to him, what is the meaning of Mr. Reuven and Mr. Shimon? That has no legal status, Mr. Reuven and Mr. Shimon. Basically, what he said to him is pay me back in front of two witnesses. That's the only legal aspect of his statement. And the guy did pay him back in front of two witnesses who are currently in court testifying. So what's the problem? That is the only legal aspect of this stipulation. He can't say no other witness. That's not even what was implied by what he said. Amalei Rava, isn't that, what do you mean it's not implied by what he said? Why did he mention Mr. Reuven and Mr. Shimon? What he was saying is, you have to accept, when you take this loan from me, that the only people that I trust, seriously, is Reuven and Shimon. And he actually meant that. And therefore, it was like the loan was given on condition that Reuven and Shimon are going to say that it was discharged. Another myself. Again, at the time that he's lending money. So he said to him, when you pay me back, I want you to pay me back, not in front of any two sloppy Joes. I want you to pay me back in front of two people who are Talmidei Chachamim, and who are at least capable of giving over Mishnayos to people that teach Mishnayos. So he went ahead, and he paid him back, but he just paid him back privately. And then, when the guy took the money from him, on his way home, he was mugged. And the money was taken from him, from the lender, who had accepted it back from the borrower. Okay, so he sued the guy who paid him back, claiming that, look, I said he should only pay me back in front of people who could teach Mishnah, and he didn't. So why'd you take it from him? I took it from him to hold as a picadon for him, to do him a favor. So I was a shomer that the money should be here, and then we were going to bring it in front of Adim, who are Tani Mishnah, and I would show them, here's the money, he paid me back, it's in front of the Aiden, and that would have closed this procedure. But, unfortunately, I was accosted, and I'm potter, I mean, I'm just a shomer chinam on his money, it's not my fault that I was accosted, and that's his problem, it's not my problem, let him pay me. So, Atul Akami de Reb Nachman, and he says to Reb Nachman, yes, it's true that I took the money, but I only took it derech pikadon. I was just keeping it for him until we could find the witnesses. The amina, so I said, I'll keep it for him to make sure that the money is safe. Until we find people that are actually Talmidei Chachamim of this caliber. And I said, to myself, obviously. I mean, I didn't say this to the court, that I'm going to keep it like a Bekadim. And therefore, at that point, when I find such people, will be Mekayim, the repayment, like my stipulation, and everything will be good. So they still have to pay me. I'm a Shomer and I'm Potter. Or Marley. So Nachman said to him, listen, when a guy who's owed money admits that he accepted the money, that is called repayment. I mean, if you would have said, I am not accepting this as repayment, do you want me to keep it for you as a pikadon? That would be very nice. But you didn't say that, okay? So I understand, and I think anybody understands, that if a person is owed money, and the person who borrowed the money pays him back the money, and he takes the money and walks out of the room, that he was repaid. Well, you admit that you were repaid. Now you want to do all of this fancy, brilliant legal arguments. I wasn't repaid because it didn't keep the stipulation. I was merely acting as a gabbai tzedakah. Come on, man. I'll tell you what, you know. You say, but what about my stipulation? I have a great idea, says Reb Nachman. Why don't we be mekayim that stipulation right here? Bring the money. Now here's me. Here's Reb Sheshes. We know how to teach Mishnah. As a matter of fact, we even know Hilchos HaSifra, Sifri, Tosefta. We know the whole Shas. We're good enough. So you pay it back right here in front of us. Show us the money. And then you were Mekayim the Tanai. How do you like that? So we're all very happy. Well, he wasn't very happy. But anyway, that was the end of that case. There was another case where somebody says, Havli mea zuzi do ziftecha, give me the $100 I lent you. And the guy says to him, who? What? $100? You lent me? Lo hayudvar miolam. No such thing ever took place. Okay. So now the guy who had brought the case for collection, he goes and he brings witnesses. And the thing is that those witnesses say to the court, we saw him lend $100 to this guy. And we also saw the guy pay back the $100. Okay, so now his witnesses on the surface don't seem to have been a great service to him because they're saying that, okay, but Lamaisa, he doesn't owe you $100, right? So Abaya says, so look, what to do? Inu Amre Osfet. Even though the witnesses said that there was a loan, but they themselves say that it was repaid. So therefore, we can't use witnesses who say you don't owe money to be Mechayev of a person and to say, you do owe that money. That doesn't make sense. Rava says it makes perfectly good sense. Look, the witnesses say there was a loan. Okay, we now have established there was a loan. Now, this guy says there never was a loan. Okay? I got news for you. Any person who says there never was a loan is essentially saying, I never paid back that loan since it never existed. Now, what is more valuable, the witnesses or the defendant's own statement? The witnesses say, this gentleman paid back his loan. The gentleman says, I never paid back the loan. Who are we going to listen to? Hodas Baldin. And Hodas Baldin is Kameyayidim Dami. So what good is that aspect of your testimony? This guy says, okay, you're lovely people. I paid back the loan, but I didn't. Okay, so pay now. Very good. So Kola Omer Lo Laviti. This is another Gavi rule. Kola Omer Lo Laviti. Ka Omer Lo Porati Dami. That is the equivalent of saying, I never paid it back, since he says, I never took the loan. Another case. That's why we have all of those simonim, to remember all these cases. Avudi Amalei Lechave. We have another case where somebody says, Havli mea zuze demasikna becha. Give me the $100 that you owe me. So he says to him, didn't I pay you back in front of Mr. Reuven and Mr. Shimon? Mr. Reuven and Mr. Shimon come into court and they say, this guy never paid a dime in front of us. We have no idea what he's talking about. Ah, so now Reb Sheshes said to himself, you know, or said to himself and he said in the courtroom, look, this guy essentially is not going to be Naaman even to swear that he paid him back. because he's a kafran, and therefore we can't trust the shvua at all. Amar le Rava, not true. We can trust the shvua because of the klal that we had before, and remember the Mesillas Yesharim made this big cornerstone of his idea of awareness that is necessary to keep a cheshbon ha-nefesh in order for a person to be able to be a zoyer. And that is another Gabi rule, which he already wrote down, kol milta delorami ale de'inshe lava daite. Anything that a person is not thinking about and was not at all aware of what he was doing, he's not going to remember the details. So he just knows that he paid back this loan. Now, it's irrelevant if there's a detail. Was Mr. Reuven and Mr. Shimon there at the time? Or maybe it was Charlie and Joe. I think it was Mr. Reuven and Mr. Shimon. That's not considered to be a lie because it's just extraneous details. And extraneous details are lav adaiti. That's the point. Who the Omar le lechavre? Another case. This was a case of a guy who said, you owe me 600 zuz, so pay me back. Omar le, and the other guy says to him, but don't you remember that I gave you mea kavi of afze? I had 100 kav of these afatzim. Afatzim are the kind of the nut, that they call them gallnut, that are used for making the parchments that are good for writing on and so on. So those things at the time were worth 6 zuz per kav, and I gave you 100 kavim. Last I heard, 6 times 100 kavim is 600. So the guy said, yes, you did give me, but at the time they were not at 6 per kav, they were at 4 per kav. Lav ba'arba'a, arba'a ve'kaima, you owe me another 200 because you only paid me back 400. Comes along Besdin, to Besdin, witnesses that are made that it's really the case that they were only worth 4 zuz per kav at the time. And therefore, he's signing, okay, I have witnesses that the debt was still 200 shekel. Amar Rava, so, if that's the case, then this guy who borrowed the money and claimed that he had paid it back at the rate of 6 per kav, and therefore the whole thing is paid back, he is huchzak kafran. He can't even take a shvuas heset anymore, and basically, he's a liar. Omar Rami Bar Chama, how can you do that? Rava, you yourself said that kol milta delo ramule din shelava daite, and now you're calling him a liar because he's not a bucky and what the price was, maybe 6 months ago. Omar le Rava, oh man. If the guy is making a deal and paying back, you're calling that lava daite. Kitsuta datira mitkar dechiri inche. That's one thing that any businessman remembers. This is what the shekel was trading at the time. This is what gallnuts were trading at the time. And that is by no means called a milta de lo ramule a inche. This is, on the contrary, the ultimate milta de ramule a inche.